Hello, and welcome to the reading of the Mason City Globe-Gazette for October 18, 2023. I'm your reader, Craig Shives. On the front page, the major headline is War in the Middle East. Officials, hundreds dead at hospital. From the Gaza Strip, a massive blast rocked a Gaza City hospital packed with wounded and other Palestinians seeking shelter on Tuesday, killing hundreds of people, the Hamas-run health ministry said. Hamas blamed an Israeli airstrike, while the Israeli military claimed the hospital was hit by a rocket misfired by Palestinian militants. The Gaza Health Ministry said at least 500 people were killed. Video that the Associated Press confirmed was from the hospital showed fire engulfing the building and the hospital's grounds strewn with torn bodies, many of them young children. Outrage over what many believe was an Israeli strike flared across the region a day before President Joe Biden was due to arrive to show support for Israel and try to prevent the war from spreading. The carnage unfolded as the U.S. tried to convince Israel to allow the delivery of supplies to desperate civilians, aid groups, and hospitals in the tiny Gaza Strip, which has been under siege since Hamas' deadly rampage in southern Israel last week. Hamas called Tuesday's hospital blast a horrific massacre. Hundreds of Palestinians took refuge in Al-Ahil, Hili, and other hospitals in Gaza City in recent days, hoping they would be spared bombardment after Israel ordered all residents of the city and surrounding areas to evacuate to the southern Gaza Strip. Ambulances and private cars rushed some 350 casualties from the Al-Ahili blast to Gaza City's main hospital, Al-Shifa, which already was overwhelmed with wounded from other strikes, said its director Mohammed Abu Salimia. The wounded were laid onto bloody floors, screaming in pain. "We are squeezing 5 beds into a single tiny room. We need equipment, we need medicine, we need beds, we need anesthesia, we need everything," Abu Salmiya said, warning that the fuel supply for the hospital's generators will run out Wednesday. "I think Gaza's medical sector will collapse within hours." Before the Al-Ahili hospital deaths, Israel strikes on Gaza killed at least 2,778 people and wounded 9,700, according to the Gaza Health Ministry. Almost two-thirds of those killed were children, a ministry official said. Another 1,200 people across Gaza are believed to be buried under the rubble, alive or dead, health authorities said. Hamas' October 7 attack in southern Israel killed more than 1,400 people, mostly civilians, and took some 200 captives into Gaza. Hamas militants in Gaza have launched rockets every day since, aiming at cities across Israel. In protest over the purported airstrike, Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas canceled his participation in a meeting with Biden, Jordan's King Abdullah II, and Egypt's president set for Wednesday in Amman, Jordan, to discuss the war. Abbas' Palestinian Authority runs part of the West Bank. Later, Jordan's foreign minister told state-run television that Jordan called off the summit, saying that the war between Israel and Hamas was pushing the region to the brink. He said the meeting would be postponed. The comments emerged as Biden boarded the plane for his Mideast trip. Reporters shouted questions at him about the Jordan summit, but Biden did not answer. Hundreds of Palestinians flooded the streets of major West Bank cities, including Ramallah, the seat of the Palestinian Authority, where protesters hurled stones at Palestinian security forces who fired back with stun grenades. Others threw stones at Israeli checkpoints where soldiers killed one Palestinian, West Bank authorities said. Hundreds of people joined protests that erupted in Beirut and Amman, where an angry crowd gathered outside the Israeli embassy. Biden's visit in part aims to prevent the war from sparking a broader regional conflict. Violence flared on Tuesday along Israel's border with Lebanon, where Iranian-backed Hezbollah militants operate and where Israel has evacuated nearby towns. With tens of thousands of troops massed along the border, Israel has been expected to launch a ground invasion into Gaza, but its plans remained uncertain. "We are preparing for the next stages of war," military spokesman Lieutenant Colonel Richard Hecht said. "We haven't said what they will be. Everybody's talking about a ground offensive. It might be something different." Throughout the day, Tuesday, airstrikes killed dozens of civilians and at least one senior Hamas figure in the southern half of the Gaza Strip, where the Israeli military told fleeing Palestinians to go. An Associated Press reporter saw around 50 bodies brought to Nasser Hospital after strikes in the southern city of Khan Yunis. An airstrike in Deir el-Balah reduced a house to rubble, killing a man and 11 women and children inside and in a neighboring house, some of whom had evacuated from Gaza City. Witnesses said there was no warning before the strike. Shelling from Israeli tanks hit a UN school in central Gaza, where 4,000 Palestinians had taken refuge, killing 6 people and wounding dozens, the United Nations Palestinian Refugee Agency said. At least 24 UN installations have been hit the past week, killing at least 14 members of the agency's staff. The Israeli military said it was targeting Hamas hideouts, infrastructure, and command centers. A barrage of strikes crashed into the Berej refugee camp in central Gaza, leveling an entire block of homes and causing dozens of casualties among families inside, residents said. Among those killed was one of Hamas' top military commanders, Ayman Nofal, the group's military wing said, the highest profile militant known to have been killed so far in the war. Also on the front page, an article entitled "Tensions Over Mideast Violence Surface on College Campuses." America's colleges aspire to be places where ideas meet and common ground emerges. As the death toll rises in the Israel-Hamas war, they have become seats of anguish. Many Jewish students and their allies, some with family and friends in Israel, have demanded bold reckonings and strong condemnation after the attacks by Hamas militants, who stormed from the blockaded Gaza Strip into nearby Israeli towns, killing and abducting civilians and soldiers. Meanwhile, some Muslim students have joined with allies to call for a recognition of decades of suffering by Palestinians in Gaza, plus condemnation of the response by Israel. After the Hamas attack, Israel launched a total blockade of Gaza. Airstrikes have flattened buildings and homes, killing civilians and forcing hundreds of thousands to evacuate. On many campuses, these students agree on one thing. Their colleges, which are increasingly staking out positions of neutrality, have not done enough to support them. College officials, already under pressure to allow conservative opinions on campus, have been trying to preserve free speech and open debate, but the conflict has presented an excruciating challenge. This is an incredibly difficult free speech moment on campuses, where both sides have deeply passionate, entrenched, intractable views, said Alex Morey, director of campus rights advocacy at the Foundation for Individual Rights and Expression, which is recommending that colleges try to remain institutionally neutral. "We want to create an ideal climate for debate and discussion on campus, and the only way we can do that is if we step out of the debate," Morey said. Yet staying neutral is not always easy. Students for whom the conflict is intensely personal want their administrations to recognize how they are affected by traumatic events and use their stature to denounce what they see as moral wrongs. Colleges across the country have put out statements on the war. Many have faced criticism for not going far enough in condemning Hamas' attack, or for failing to condemn civilian deaths in Gaza, or for leaving out context and history from the region. As of Saturday, the death toll was more than 2,200 in Gaza and over 1,300 on the Israeli side, many of those civilians, and roughly 1,500 Hamas militants killed in the fighting, according to authorities. Stanford University, for one, has shifted more toward neutrality as events unfolded. On Monday, officials at the California school said they were deeply saddened and horrified by the death and human suffering in Israel and Gaza, hoped for thoughtful opportunities for sharing knowledge on campus. In response, dozens of faculty signed a letter demanding unambiguous condemnation of the Hamas attacks. On Wednesday, Stanford sent an update explaining its position on neutrality. Faculty and students should not expect frequent commentary from us in the future, college officials said. At Columbia University, the campus was closed Thursday as a safety measure as hundreds attended dueling pro-Israel and pro-Palestinian rallies. Some students were angry that a statement from the university president did not go far enough to acknowledge Palestinian deaths. Clearly, we're all against violence, but we're just asking for the lives of Palestinians to be acknowledged as well, said Nadia Ali, who demonstrated alongside hundreds of peers. Many were dressed in the green, red, and black of the Palestinian flag and wearing medical face masks. Across the Manhattan campus main lawn, demonstrators draped themselves in the blue and white Israeli flag and held prayer and song circles. One demonstrator, Yola Ashkenazi, said some Jewish students feel unsafe. The rise in anti-Semitism on our campus has been abhorrent. A day earlier, a 19-year-old woman was charged with assaulting a student in a dispute over posters bearing the names and images of hostages being held by Hamas. At Yale University, Free Palestine messages were written in chalk around campus one night. The following night, some students put up posters of Israelis taken hostage with the word kidnapped. There was also controversy over social media posts by a professor of American Studies, Zarina Grimal, who wrote after the Hamas attack, "Settlers are not civilians. This is not hard." A petition circulated demanding her removal. Grimal did not respond to a request for comment. Talking politics is inevitably sensitive on campuses with diverse populations, said Hussam Ailush, CEO of the California branch of the Council on American-Islamic Relations. But if colleges choose to issue official statements, Ailush said, then do it morally. Don't be selective about which lives are more valued than others. Every innocent life is important. Do it accurately. So we're not just commenting on actions, but we're also commenting on the root causes of the actions, he said, pointing to Israel's treatment of Palestinians during decades of conflict. Some of the most notable recent disputes have come at Harvard University, where the Palestine Solidarity Committee student group released a statement holding Israel entirely responsible for all unfolding violence, co-signed by a few dozen other student organizations. At least one student had a job offer rescinded as a result of the statement. Then Accuracy in Media, a conservative group, arranged for a billboard truck to drive around campus showing the faces of students associated with the groups. Harvard's leading anti-Semites, it called them. Former Harvard president Lawrence Summers, who is Jewish, was critical of university's leadership for appearing at best neutral towards acts of terror against the Jewish state of Israel. In nearly 50 years of Harvard affiliation, I have never been as disillusioned and alienated as I am today, Summers said on X, formerly known as Twitter. On page 2, an article from Santa Fe, New Mexico, entitled Baldwin Could Be Recharged in Shooting. Special prosecutors said Tuesday they are seeking to recharge actor Alec Baldwin in the 2021 fatal shooting on a Western movie set in New Mexico by presenting evidence to a grand jury. New Mexico-based prosecutors Carrie Morrissey and Jason Lewis said they'll present evidence to grand jury within the next 2 months, noting additional facts came to light in the shooting on the set of the film Rust that killed cinematographer Halyna Hutchins. Baldwin, a co-producer of the film, was pointing a gun at Hutchins during a rehearsal on the film's set outside of Santa Fe when the gun went off on October 21, 2021, killing her and wounding director Joel Sousa. Additional facts have come to light that we believe show Mr. Baldwin has criminal culpability in the death of Halyna Hutchins and the shooting of Joel Sousa, Morrissey and Lewis said in an email. We believe the appropriate course of action is to permit a panel of New Mexico citizens to determine from here whether Mr. Baldwin should be held over for criminal trial. Baldwin has said he pulled back the hammer, but not the trigger, and the gun fired. It is unfortunate that a terrible tragedy has been turned into this misguided prosecution. We will answer any charges in court, Baldwin's attorneys Luke Nikas and Alex Spiro said in an email. Special prosecutors initially dismissed an involuntary manslaughter charge against Baldwin in April, saying they were informed that the gun might have been modified before the shooting and malfunctioned. They later pivoted and began weighing whether to refile a charge against Baldwin after receiving a new analysis of the gun. The recent gun analysis from experts in ballistics and forensic testing based in Arizona and New Mexico relied on replacement parts to reassemble the gun fired by Baldwin after parts of the pistol were broken during earlier testing by the FBI. The report examined the gun and markings it left on a spent cartridge to conclude that the trigger had to have been pulled or depressed. The analysis, led by Lucien Hayeg of Forensic Science Services in Arizona, stated that although Baldwin repeatedly denies pulling the trigger, given the tests, findings, and observations reported here, the trigger had to be pulled or depressed sufficiently to release the fully cocked or retracted hammer of the evidence revolver. An August FBI report on the agency's analysis of the gun found that, as is common with firearms of that design, it could go off without pulling the trigger if force was applied to an uncocked hammer, such as by dropping the weapon. The only way the testers could get it to fire was by striking the gun with a mallet while the hammer was down and resting on the cartridge, or by pulling the trigger while it was fully cocked. The gun eventually broke during testing. Authorities had not specified exactly how live ammunition found its way on set and into the .45 caliber revolver made by an Italian company that specializes in 19th century reproductions. And now in national and world news, an article entitled GOP Rejects Representative Jordan. More voting likely as far-right lawmaker tries to rally support. Republicans rejected Representative Jim Jordan for House Speaker on a first ballot Tuesday as 20 holdouts denied the hard-right ally of Donald Trump the GOP majority needed to seize the gavel. Additional voting was expected as the House hit at a standstill, struck stuck while Jordan works to shore up support from Republican colleagues to replace Kevin McCarthy for the job. Reluctant Republicans refuse to give Jordan their votes, viewing the Ohio congressman as too extreme for the powerful position of House Speaker, second in line to the presidency. It's been 2 weeks of angry Republican infighting since McCarthy's sudden removal by hardliners, who are now within reach of a central seat of U.S. power. The vote for House Speaker, once a formality in Congress, devolved into another bitter showdown for the gavel. Jordan said after the first vote he expected to do better in the next round. Next votes were expected Wednesday. That would be today. The tally, with 200 Republicans voting for Jordan and 212 for the Democratic leader Hakeem Jeffries of New York, left no candidate with a clear majority, as 20 Republicans voted for someone else. With Republicans in majority control, Jordan must pick up most of his GOP foes to win. The holdouts are a mix of pragmatists, ranging from seasoned legislators and committee chairs worried about governing to newer lawmakers from districts where voters back home prefer President Joe Biden to Trump. It's unclear how long the holdouts can last. Jordan swiftly flipped dozens of detractors in a matter of days, shoring up Republicans who have few options left. The political climb has been steep for Jordan, the combative Judiciary Committee chairman and a founding member of the right flank Freedom Caucus. He is known more as a chaos agent than a skilled legislator, raising questions about how he would lead. First elected in 2006, Jordan has few bills to his name from his time in office. He also faces questions about his past. Years ago, Jordan denied allegations from former wrestlers during his time as an assistant wrestling coach at Ohio State University, who accused him of knowing about claims an Ohio doctor inappropriately groped them. Jordan claims he was never aware of any abuse. Congress faces daunting challenges, risking a federal shutdown at home if it fails to fund the government, and fielding Biden's request for aid to help Ukraine and Israel in the wars abroad. And then news on the Trump fraud case. Star witness, former lawyer Michael Cohen, puts off his appearance. Donald Trump returned Tuesday to the civil fraud trial that imperils his real estate empire, watching an employee and an outside appraiser testify that his company essentially put a thumb on the scale when sizing up his property's value. Incensed by a case that disputes his net worth and could strip him of such signature holdings as Trump Tower, the former president is due to testify later in the trial. He chose to attend the first 3 days and came back Tuesday to observe and to protest his treatment to the news cameras waiting outside the Manhattan courtroom. Star witness Michael Cohen, a one-time Trump fixer turned foe, postponed his scheduled testimony because of a health problem. Instead, Trump company accountant Donna Kidder testified that she was told to make some assumptions favorable to the firm on internal financial spreadsheets. Outside appraiser Doug Larson said he didn't suggest or condone a former Trump Organization comptroller's methods of valuing properties. Trump, outside court, reiterated his insistence that he's done nothing wrong and that New York Attorney General Letitia James' lawsuit is a political vendetta. James' lawsuit alleges that Trump and his company deceived banks, insurers, and others by massively overvaluing his assets and inflating his net worth on his financial statements. "Mr. Trump may lie, but numbers don't lie," she said after court. Larson, a real estate brokerage executive and a certified appraiser, assessed Trump properties for lenders. He was taken aback when told on the stand that he was repeatedly cited as an outside expert in former Trump Organization comptroller Jeffrey McConney's valuation spreadsheets. "It's inappropriate and inaccurate," Larson testified. "I should have been told, and an appraisal should have been ordered." When it came to valuing a storefront, formerly known as Nike Town, McConney relied on rates of return for a different type of property, rather than for comparable retail space, Larson testified. He also said he appraised a Trump-owned Wall Street building at $540 million in 2015, while McConney valued it at $735.4 million on Trump's financial statement. On the war in Ukraine, an article entitled "Ukraine Says It Used U.S. Missiles in Attack." Kyiv's forces strike two airfields in regions occupied by Russia. Ukraine claimed Tuesday it carried out one of the most destructive attacks on Russian air assets since the beginning of the war, with Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky saying the assault used longer-range ballistic missiles donated by the United States. The announcement came hours after a U.S. official revealed that the longer-range ballistic missiles, which Kyiv sought for months and President Joe Biden promised, were delivered quietly and are in battlefield use. Ukraine's Special Operations Forces claimed it destroyed nine Russian helicopters at two airfields in Russia-occupied regions in a nighttime attack on targets in eastern and southern Ukraine. It also hit military equipment, an air defense system, ammunition warehouses, and runways, a statement said. Dozens of Russian artillery personnel were injured in the attack, codenamed Operation Dragonfly, it said. Several U.S. officials said Washington provided Ukraine with a small number of the Army Tactical Missile System, known as ATACMS, making good on a promise Biden made last month. In a short article, we learn that the Pentagon has released video of Chinese intercepts. The Pentagon released footage on Tuesday of some more than 180 intercepts of U.S. warplanes by Chinese aircraft in the last 2 years, more than the total amount over the previous decade, and part of a trend U.S. military officials called concerning. The photos and video were released in advance of a soon-to-be-issued annual Pentagon report on China's military power and security threats it may pose in the Indo-Pacific. The Pentagon tried for years to ready for a potential conflict with China over Taiwan, even as it supports allies in two wars, Ukraine and Israel. Admiral John Aquilino, head of U.S. Indo-Pacific Command, said at a news briefing that despite using resources to assist those allies, the command has what it needs to deter China. And that does it for today's reading of the Mason City Globe Gazette for October 18, 2023. I'm your reader, Craig Shives. You can access a recording of today's reading on our website. Hello, and welcome to the reading of the Fort Dodge Messenger for October 18, 2023. I'm your reader, Craig Shives. On the front page, the major article is entitled "A Deadly Mix: Fentanyl Found in Other Illegal Drugs," police chief says. Over the last several years, law enforcement has gained a new foe in the war on drugs. Though the synthetic opioid fentanyl isn't anything new, it was developed some 60 years ago as an intravenous anesthetic used in hospital settings. Its use as an additive in other illegal narcotics to increase potency and volume of product has become more prevalent across the United States in the last decade. According to the United States Drug Enforcement Administration, seizures of fentanyl pills have dramatically increased, even in the last year. So far in 2023, the DEA has seized a record of more than 62 million fentanyl pills, exceeding the 2022 yearly total of 58 million pills. The DEA has also seized more than 9,700 pounds of fentanyl powder in 2023. Since the start of the fentanyl crisis in 2014, outbreaks of overdose deaths have cropped up across the nation, especially in large cities, according to the DEA. Though central Iowa may not see the same level of drug trafficking that large metro areas do, fentanyl is still present in local communities. Here in Fort Dodge, narcotics investigations are seeing some fentanyl in the local drug trade, Fort Dodge Police Chief Dennis Quinn said. We don't have a ginormous fentanyl problem, per se. But, the narcotics detective said, it is becoming one of those things where the other narcotics that people are using, it's getting added into another substance, say like cocaine or methamphetamine, Quinn said. Quinn said that when investigators seize and test other illegal substances, they learn that fentanyl is present as well. Powdered fentanyl is often mixed into the other drugs to increase the potency of the product, he said. But because illegal narcotics are involved, there are no regulations governing the mixing of the drugs, so there's no way to know if any amount of fentanyl added is a potential lethal dose. Say, if you mixed it with a batch of meth and you parse it out into multiple bags, your first 10 bags may only have barely any fentanyl in it, and that 11th bag may be mostly fentanyl, which is where we get some overdoses from, Quinn said. Though fentanyl is most often mixed into other illegal narcotics, it is also sold and abused on its own in several different forms, according to the DEA. Street names for the drug include Apache, China Girl, Chinatown, Dance Fever, Friend, Goodfellas, Great Bear, He-Man, Jackpot, King Ivory, Murder 8, and Tango and Cash. It doesn't appear that fentanyl is being manufactured or processed around here, Quinn said. He said that the narcotics detective works on tracking where the drugs are coming from and said that they're not being trafficked in from out of state. According to Quinn, the department's narcotics detective hasn't seen a ton of instances of counterfeit pills being seized in Fort Dodge, but they have had some cases. I'm not so naive as to think that we haven't had fentanyl pills here. I'm sure we probably have, but according to our narcotics detective, it's not a very prevalent thing, Quinn said. Most of what we're seeing is some form of it found with other drugs of some sort. What illicit manufacturers do, Quinn said, is press pills of fentanyl and other binding agents and then label and sell them as something else. Some people may not even know that the pill they're ingesting, they may be thinking it's oxycodone or something like that, and think that it's safe to take, and then all of a sudden they overdose on something that they didn't even know they were taking, he said. That's exactly what happened to Dalton Ryder, a 19-year-old native of Webster City, who died from an accidental opioid overdose in 2016. Ryder's mother, Denise Ryder, has shared her son's story many times, most recently at the Opioid Awareness Day event in Fort Dodge on August 31. In 2016, Dalton Ryder was living in Arizona and had run out of his prescription of hydrocodone for an old back injury that still pained him. So he reached out to someone he knew to buy a pill to ease the pain. He even looked for a photo of a hydrocodone pill online so he could verify that's what he was about to take. But instead, he was sold a counterfeit pill with a lethal dose of fentanyl mixed into it. Using contaminated drugs or taking a counterfeit pill aren't the only ways someone can experience a fentanyl overdose. The powdered form of the drug can become airborne, be inhaled, and in some cases it can be absorbed into the skin. So, unwitting exposure to the drug is also a risk. According to the DEA, A deadly dose of fentanyl is just 2 milligrams. In 2019, a patrol officer with the Fort Dodge Police Department was exposed to a substance suspected to be fentanyl when he conducted a traffic stop and arrest on the Kenyon Road Bridge. While at the scene of the traffic stop, then Officer Chris Wieland had handled an unknown substance found in the vehicle before transporting the driver to the law enforcement center. According to reporting from the time, on the way to the center, Wieland began feeling dizzy and asked the dispatcher to send medical help. The officer was able to just make it to the center, where another officer found him lethargic and unresponsive in his patrol vehicle. Wieland received 2 doses of Narcan, a drug that reverses the effects of opioids and is used in situations of overdose, in the ambulance on the way to the hospital, and received additional Narcan doses in the emergency room. He recovered and was released from the hospital the next day. At the time, officials suspected Wieland had been exposed to fentanyl, but testing of the substance was inconclusive, Quinn said. Less than a week later, the Reverend Al Henderson and his Serving Our Servants organization began raising money to purchase more doses of Narcan for officers to carry when on patrol. Each officer already carried Narcan, but Henderson was concerned about having a ready supply of Narcan for officers. Narcan is delivered in a nasal spray, which is temperature sensitive and can be less effective if exposed to extreme temperatures. The medication can also expire. Today, Fort Dodge Police Department officers still carry a box of Narcan at all times. It's really meant to be available in case an officer is exposed during patrol or while executing a search warrant. But many times, officers have used the Narcan sprays to revive an unresponsive person when sent out on overdose calls, Quinn said. In the last 12 months, the Fort Dodge PD has been dispatched on 34 calls for service for potential overdoses. That number does not accurately reflect the number of actual overdoses in the community, Quinn said. First, some of those calls may have been initially reported as an overdose, but when officers and medics arrived, they found the situation to be something else. Secondly, not all overdoses are reported to dispatch as an overdose, Quinn said. Sometimes the incident will be reported as a run-of-the-mill medical call with an ill patient, but when the Fort Dodge Fire Department takes the patient to the emergency room, physicians realize it isn't an illness, but is actually an overdose. Then they don't tell us because they can't tell us, Quinn said, referring to medical privacy laws, so it would be hard for us to get an actual number of overdoses. He said he wasn't aware of any fatalities in Fort Dodge that have definitely been attributed to fentanyl overdose. But as long as the synthetic opioid remains mixed in with the local illegal drug supply, the possibility is always there. You just don't know what you're putting into your body with any of these drugs, or what could potentially be in that, Quinn said. Because do you really trust your drug dealer? I mean, can you really trust someone who's selling you an illegal narcotic? Also on the front page, an article entitled "Drivers Near Webster City, Take Heed." New speed cameras in place on US 20 and Iowa Highway 17. Webster City's automatic speed enforcement cameras will go live just after midnight, in other words, at 12:01 a.m. Wednesday. There are 2 sites being monitored by the new automated speed enforcement program. One is on Highway 17 south of Webster City between Close Drive and Millard's Lane. The second is along U.S. Highway 20 near the Webster City Water Tower. In each of these locations, there are cameras on both sides of the roadway. Webster City Police Chief Shiloh Mork said in a media release on Monday that the first 30 days of the program will be a warning and community awareness period. Sensys Gatso, a Swedish firm that operates worldwide and with offices in Marion, Iowa, installed the system. The city's agreement with Sensys Gutso was made on April 17, 2023. There was no upfront cost to implement the system. Revenue from paid violations will be shared between Sensys Gutso and the City of Webster City. Webster City Manager Daniel Ortiz Hernandez said the revenue that comes to the city will be applied in the following ways. First, it will be used to support the Webster City Police Department, whose manpower will be tasked with reviewing camera footage and processing the results. Second, it will fund public safety equipment. Third, it will support public safety operations. Fourth, the monies will go into a general services category. Eventually, there is the possibility of traffic enforcement camera revenue also being used to increase manpower at the Webster City Police Department. Ortiz Hernandez said, "That will depend on the workload the camera system will increase," he said. After the 30-day grace period, here are the fines speeders can expect to see. These fines for speeding violations were adopted by the Webster City Council at its meeting on July 3, 2023. Speed over the limit, 1 to 5 miles an hour over the speed limit, $30. This level of speeding will not come under speed camera review. 6 to 10 miles over the speed limit, $55. This level of speeding will not come under speed camera review. 11 to 15 miles over the speed limit, $105. 16 to 20 miles an hour over the speed limit, $120. For each mile in excess of 20 miles an hour over the speed limit, $135 plus $5. The installation of the cameras at the locations in Webster City was permitted by the Iowa Department of Transportation. Mork said in his media release, following the warning period, owners of a vehicle caught speeding will receive a civil notice of violation in the mail. These tickets are not reported to the vehicle owner's insurance company or reported against their driver's license. Only those vehicles traveling in excess of 10 miles an hour over the speed limit will receive a violation notice. Violation penalties begin at $105 and increase based upon the severity of the offense. Every potential violation captured by the system is reviewed by a Webster City police representative before being processed and mailed, Mark said. Owners wishing to appeal their violation can do so by requesting an administrative hearing with the city. Mark added, independent studies have found that automated speed enforcement can reduce speeding violations by as much as 88%, thereby making the streets and highways monitored safer. According to the Insurance Institute for the Highway Safety, more than 12,000 deaths, 29% of all crash fatalities, occurred in speed-related crashes in 2021. High speeds make a crash more likely because drivers have less time to react and because it requires a longer distance to stop or slow down. They also make collisions more deadly because modest increases in speed cause large increases in crash energy. And finally, on the front page, an article entitled Taking Center Stage with Saul Berkey. Being on stage is a comfort for the Fort Dodge senior. When Saul Berkey steps on the stage, it's just like home. The Fort Dodge Senior High School senior loves to get a reaction out of the crowd, and the love of theater came at an early age from Berkey's mother. "My mom was the one who got me into acting," Berkey said. "She had me go to auditions in the sixth grade for the Hawkeye Theater play, The 12 Days of Christmas, and I fell in love with it from there. Although my mom is not here now, she is still a major influence in my life. Being on stage comes second nature, and the chance to give someone the ability to share the performance is what Berkey attempts. I love being able to bring people joy, Berkey said. Many people go to theaters to get a laugh or have a spark of emotion, and I want to be able to give them that. I truly feel like the stage is my second home. While walking the halls of Fort Dodge Senior High, Berkey has a schedule packed with activities. Berkey is involved in performers club, fall play, large group speech, individual speech, a cappella choir, Comedia Musica, Stage Door Productions, FFA, Skills USA, and is also a member of the Dodger bowling team. My secret to being busy and successful is to make sure you enjoy doing the activities you do, Berkey said. I'm able to stay mindful because of my enjoyment. Time management is also important, so you don't let yourself get burned out. With the stage and microphone a big part of Berkey's life, it's the fulfillment of being a part of something that keeps Berkey wanting more. It is important for me to be involved in so many activities because I want to make the most out of my life, Berkey said. You only get one lifetime to do things, so you need to try to do everything. That is what keeps me motivated, to always be involved in many things. Being on stage and performing starts with the work in Performers Club. I absolutely love Performers Club, Berkey said. It has given me a platform to share my love for the theatrical space with others, and I think that is so cool. I started Performers Club at the beginning of my freshman year because I knew that performing was one of my interests. Berkey will take their talents to the fall play once again as Fort Dodge Senior High will showcase their skills in Once Upon a Fairy Tale. The difference between singing and acting is that I feel singing is an extension of who I am, and acting is where I get to be a character that someone else has created, Berkey said. I am playing the Magic Mirror in the upcoming fall play, and I feel like I get to be that person that the playwright imagined. They, singing and acting, are both huge parts of my life. With Berkey's time on stage, there have been many memories on stage and bonds made. I am 100% going to miss my peers and mentors. I have never in my life been so connected to the people around me, and it will hit hard when I don't see them every day. I am also sorrowful to the fact that I am having my last high school performance ever. Though there are lasts coming, there are still plenty of memories ahead to make. I am absolutely pumped for the rest of my senior year, but the best part about it so far is being someone freshmen look up to, Berkey said. Especially with me being a Performers Club officer, many underclassmen look to me for advice. I appreciate them so much. While entering high school, Berkey saw a performance that truly had an impact on their life. My favorite memorable thing is during my freshman year, I saw Josh Meyer perform his acting piece for individual speech, Berkey said. I was in total awe of his awesome talent, and I truly have never forgotten it. Many laughs were shared between the crowd when he performed his piece. I am thankful for him giving me inspiration to keep acting. I want to be as good as him one day. Berkey has had a number of people that have been an influence. My biggest influences have definitely been Mrs. Krug, Ms. Rouse, Miss Walkham, and Mr. Dries, Berkey said. These mentors have truly influenced me to do great things. They truly believe in all their students, and I really appreciate them for helping me through high school. I will miss these guys the most. After high school, Berkey plans on attending the University of Northern Iowa in Cedar Falls to get a degree in theater for youth and communities and a minor in music. After that, Berkey plans on working with children in communities, putting on plays and musicals. And now to page two and an article regarding the conflict in Israel and Gaza. Article is entitled, Blast Kills Hundreds at Gaza Hospital. Hamas and Israel trade blame. Biden heads to the Mideast. A massive blast rocked a Gaza City hospital packed with wounded and other Palestinians seeking shelter Tuesday, killing hundreds of people, the Hamas-run health ministry said. Hamas blamed an Israeli airstrike, while the Israeli military said the hospital was hit by a rocket misfired by Palestinian militants. The health ministry said at least 500 people had been killed. Video that the Associated Press confirmed was from the hospital showed fire engulfing the building and the hospital's grounds, strewn with torn bodies, many of them young children. Around them in the grass were blankets, school backpacks, and other belongings. The carnage came as the U.S. tried to convince Israel to allow the delivery of supplies to desperate civilians and aid groups and hospitals in the tiny Gaza Strip, which has been under a complete siege since Hamas' deadly rampage in southern Israel last week. It also came a day before President Joe Biden was due to visit the region to show support for Israel and try to prevent the war from spreading. Hundreds of Palestinians had taken refuge in the Al-Ahli and other hospitals in Gaza City in past days, hoping they would be spared bombardment after Israel ordered all residents of the city and surrounding areas to evacuate to the southern Gaza Strip. Hamas called Tuesday's hospital strike a horrific massacre, saying it was caused by an Israeli strike. The Israeli military, however, said Palestinian militants had fired a barrage of rockets near the hospital at the time. Intelligence from multiple sources we have in our hands indicates that Islamic Jihad is responsible for the failed rocket launch, it said. Ambulances and private cars rushed some 350 casualties from the Al-Ahli blast to Gaza City's main hospital, Al-Shifa, already overwhelmed with wounded from other strikes, said its director, Mohammed Abu Selmia. The wounded were laid onto bloody floors, screaming in pain. We are squeezing 5 beds into a single tiny room. We need equipment. We need medicine. We need beds. We need anesthesia. We need everything, Abu Selmia said, warning that the fuel supply for the hospital's generators will run out on Wednesday. I think Gaza's medical sector will collapse within hours. Before the Al-Ahli hospital deaths, Israeli strikes on Gaza killed at least 2,778 people and wounded 9,700, according to the Gaza Health Ministry. Nearly two-thirds of those killed were children, a ministry official said. Another 1,200 people across Gaza are believed to be buried under the rubble, alive or dead, health authorities said. Hamas' October 7 attack in southern Israel killed more than 1,400 people, mostly civilians, and took some 200 captive into Gaza. Hamas militants in Gaza have launched rockets every day since, aiming at cities across Israel. In protest over the purported airstrike, Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas canceled his participation in a protest in a meeting with Biden, Jordan's King Abdullah II, and Egypt's president set for Wednesday in Amman, Jordan, to discuss the war. Abbas' Palestinian Authority runs parts of the West Bank. Hundreds of Palestinians flooded the streets of major West Bank cities, including Ramallah, the seat of the Palestinian Authority, where protesters hurled stones at Palestinian security forces, who fired back with stun grenades. Hundreds of people joined protests that erupted in Beirut and Amman, where an angry crowd gathered outside the Israeli embassy. With tens of thousands of troops massed along the border, Israel has been expected to launch a ground invasion into Gaza, but plans remain uncertain. "We are preparing for the next stages of war," military spokesman Lieutenant Colonel Richard Hecht said. "We haven't said what they will be. Everybody's talking about a ground offensive. It might be something different." Throughout the day, Tuesday, airstrikes killed dozens of civilians and at least one senior Hamas figure in the southern half of the Gaza Strip, where the Israeli military had told Palestinians to evacuate. Two, an Associated Press reporter saw around 50 bodies brought to Nasser Hospital after strikes in the southern city of Khan Yunis. The war between Israel and Hamas raises U.S. fears. A fatal stabbing in Illinois, a gun pointed at protesters in Pennsylvania, vandalism at synagogues, and harassment of staff at a Palestinian restaurant are all raising fears that the war between Israel and Hamas is sparking violence in the United States. The tensions follow a familiar pattern of crimes against Jewish and Muslim communities, rising when conflict erupts in the Middle East and the Americans have been killed or taken hostage. "We have a two-pronged threat to American faith communities," said Brian Levine, founding director of the Center for the Study of Hate and Extremism at California State University, San Bernardino. "While it's too soon to say with certainty whether anti-Muslim and anti-Jewish crimes have increased during the war, hate crimes overall increased in the U.S. last year."